This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. Welcome back, Dr. Lou.
Well, thank you. It's certainly nice to be back.
Good to have you in person, yes.
Yes, ma'am. I completely agree. I just, it's amazing how, you just get taken down with things and you have to deal with them. So that's what happened. I really want to thank you for indulging my inability to get here and, for doing a replay of a really good discussion with one of the great doctors in the field of what's going on with COVID. And then, of course, George Williams. I have to say thank you to George for coming on last week and sitting in for me. So I'll be honest with you. I'm still kind of going through the last minute. Antibodies are still kind of affecting me a little bit. But for the most part, I'm well enough to do what I need to be doing. So here we are. So,
are you willing to get into the discussion? I should have asked you off the air about a vaccinated booster person being taken down 2 weeks by COVID.
Oh, well, I'm actually one of the things I wanted to talk about today with this whole, unraveling of the mask and vax mandates. I think it's an important aspect. You see what's going on in Canada, but it's also coming through here. So, yeah, I mean, the reality is that, I had two shots. I did not get the booster. I was not going to get the booster. But Omicron is one of those things. It's much more like a flu-like thing, and that's exactly what got me, So we dealt with it, and we're finished with it. But the bigger picture here, and this is what one of the things I want to talk about today. I want to talk about some of these issues that have been pressing on us over the last 3 weeks, really, one of which is this whole business of the masking, vaccine, and the absolute, rejection of all of this when you see what's going on in Canada and other places. Even these Democrat blue states are starting to move away from masking, okay? And, of course, the Super Bowl hypocrisy was incredible.
Yeah.
So there you are. The other thing, too, that we've had to deal with, this is this question of what's going on in international relations with the Ruskies and Ukraine, and I do want to talk a little bit about that. And then I do also want to get into, state politics at the gubernatorial level and at the Secretary of State levels with what, we're hearing about issues related to both of those races. So there's always more to talk about than we have time to do. So, that's just a given. But it seems like it's especially true today because I feel like I've been away for a year, and yet it's only been 2 weeks. But however that is, let's just begin with this whole business of the masking vaccine mandate. And I want to frame this along the lines of what Dee Cox and Health Freedom and Common Sense did back in December, going to the Baldwin County Board of Education, making a very strong case that masks should not be brought back, number one. And in Deke's case, he made the case that the vaccines were dangerous to the children. More and more evidence that Deke had, showed exactly heart attacks, out astronomical number of them in athletes who were superb athletes. I mean, great physical condition, dying like flies, okay? So you have a situation where, on the one hand, the argument for, BCBE to push vaccines not only on the students and, the teachers, but to push them at the lowest levels, which made no sense since the students at, the youngest ages were by far at less risk. There was no sense in this. So the argument that we made that night, and I think has prevailed, is that what you're seeing is the unraveling of whatever argument that was made in terms of, well, you have to be vaccinated because that'll protect you. Well, it really doesn't. You know, these breakthroughs that occurred during the Delta period back in August, as well as with Omicron, certainly suggest that there are issues. Now, that doesn't mean that the end of the world is here. It means, as so many of us have had to do, just deal with, you know, it's like a flu-like symptom. So let's just get on with this. And I think this is the lesson that many of these blue states are starting to figure out late in the game, but nevertheless, they are figuring it out, and they're starting to get rid of the mask mandate. The real question is, you know, can places like Canada, you know, can those truckers prevail to impose upon Trudeau's government a similar approach which takes them away from all of these mandates? We'll see how that goes. Certainly here in this country, the Supreme Court did decide in favor of, you know, no vax mandates for non-healthcare people. I'm still kind of scratching our head about why healthcare people, you know, in that industry should be required to get the vaccinations. But nevertheless, the point is that there's been a tilt in favor of freedom here. And I think that that's important for us to continue to recognize that and make sure that these gubernatorial candidates are all along the lines of, you know, not going down this mask mandate, not going down the lockdown road. We've got to make sure that these people are with us on that. So I do think, though, that, you know, we're starting to see, you know, a movement in the right direction. And, you know, like I said, I've been away for 3 weeks now, essentially. But that, to me, is a substantially good outlook in terms of where we're going with this. And I think the whole issue of an emergency decree ends on the 1st of March, and we'll see what Biden and them are going to do. Hopefully they will just let it die. But you see, I mean, the Democrats have a real interest in keeping this out there. And that interest is to make sure that the next election in November of 2022 can be taken apart, just like the last one in 2020 was. You know, by saying, see, there's too much fear, you can't go out, you know, just mail in your ballots. That's all you have to do. And if they get away with that again, then, you know, we are in very deep trouble as it is. It will only get worse because people are going to see through this. We'll see how long this goes on in terms of putting up with this kind of absolute, you know, stealing of the election. And I think that, you know, the arguments in favor of 2020 being stolen, we've been through this with you all before. I mean, it's a no-brainer what happened in Pennsylvania. I mean, think about it. You know, it's a no-brainer about what happened in Arizona, and Arizona's been all over the place, and you know, uh-oh. Sounds bad stuff outside.
The construction,
I don't know what that was.
Yes, sir. The Church Street infrastructure project downtown.
Sounded like Jurassic Park coming in the studio.
We're still here.
We're still here. So, I mean, you have these kinds of residual, you know, issues that just will not go away because they are, in fact, based on facts that can't be disputed. Whether it's Georgia and the consent decree, whether it's Pennsylvania and the whole business with unconstitutional changes, whether it's Arizona. I mean, go down the list. Alabama was relatively free of all this, although even there were issues about some 10,000 or so dead people voting, which I think is still being looked at. And there were about three counties that had some problems that have been identified that people are looking into, okay? But for the most part, Secretary Merrill, I thought, did a good job with the election here. He won a Supreme Court verdict supporting how we do business with our absentee ballots. I mean, that was a monumental step in the right direction, you know, to have the Supreme Court declare that absentee ballots that require identification, that require, you know, two validations from witnesses. I mean, that is a substantial victory for how to do business. And you can't have election integrity if you don't have correct voter identification. So just thinking along those lines about that, I think it's important for us to, you know, think about that. Now, let me shift to international relations and what's going on with the Ruskies, Ukraine, Putin, all of this. You know, of all the things that have been going on since over the last 3 weeks when I was kind of down with COVID, the fact of a Russian buildup around the border of Ukraine is real. I mean, I don't think there's any dispute about that. The real question, though, is what are Putin's objectives here? And how does it fit into, you know, how we're supposed to react to this? And once again, we get back to, you know, some basic fundamental concepts about foreign relations. And there are different views about foreign relations. What Obama and Biden did under the Obama, you know, rule was completely different than what you saw with Trump. And there's nothing new about this in terms of philosophical differences about how to approach foreign policy. Okay, I get that. Okay. Our difficulty, though, is that in the post-Trump period, you have Biden, who, as I've mentioned to you all before, Biden has been wrong about so many different foreign policy issues. I'm not going to repeat all of them. We've been down that road, okay? So the question is, the foreign policy team that Biden brought in, do they have what it takes to make the kinds of judgments about what to do about issues going forward? Well, let me just suggest this. If you think that they do have that capability, how the hell do you explain Afghanistan? Duh. Got a problem here, folks. Okay? Got a real problem. So, not only do you have a problem just in terms of how they failed in Afghanistan, the real question is, can you trust their judgment in anything else? And here's where I think that it becomes very apparent that their worldview and how they are going to manage these various issues does not really stand up to the test of, you know, what we've already seen them do with in the case of Afghanistan, but just look at it in terms of their worldview about how global climate change is the most critical thing that the Pentagon has to worry about. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, when you have a war-fighting organization that suddenly has as its major mission to deal with climate change, you've got to be... God, I'd like to say a bad word, but I won't, okay?
Hold back.
Lori's got me by the throat here. I mean, can you believe this? Okay, so, but here again, this is a worldview problem, okay? And I don't think that the neocons can be blamed for, you know, what's going on in terms of how these guys are approaching things. Okay, I don't think that George Bush's approach to the war on terror is a factor today in terms of, you know, how we need to do with the new reality of what I would label as a new axis of evil. That's Russia, China, and our friends the Iranians. Okay? And so if your frame of reference is along the lines of what I just suggested, that there's something going on in world politics that is inimical to American interests and American security, then it seems to me that you need to be able to take a closer look at the specifics of each of these issues. So let's take a look at the issue of Ukraine and what Putin's goal is here, what his key goal is, as far as I can see, and tease this out to where we can come up with some sort of a reasonable approach to this. And again, I have to take issue with Tucker Carlson here. I mean, and again, he's a great reporter, does wonderful work. I mean, just examines everything and illuminates things that most of us just, you know, miss, okay? But in this case about Ukraine, I think he's missing the mark, okay? And he's missing the mark because the geopolitical circumstances by which we see ourselves today, with the rise of Russia, the rise of China, and their working together in conjunction to deal with an America that they don't like and they don't want to see us having an influence in world affairs. So, and when you throw in the Iranians into the mix, you have an extremely volatile situation developing with three powers that have aspirations that are not necessarily along the lines of peace and love and all the rest of that good stuff from the 60s. Okay? Now, maybe it's possible that in this particular case with Ukraine, Putin's goals are purely defensive. In other words, he doesn't want to have NATO on his border. Now, I have to say that in my foreign policy classes over the last 20 years, this has been an issue that's come up. We've debated about this. You know, was Clinton right in trying to push, you know, Ukraine into NATO? Well, on the face of it, you know, why not? Ukraine came out of the Soviet Union, and they were independent, and if they wanted to join NATO, so be it. On the other hand, you know, you do have to recognize that, you know, NATO was, you know, designed to protect Europe from, you know, the Soviet Union and its aggressiveness. And so does it make sense with the, you know, complete collapse of the Soviet Union to move in the direction so aggressively to put NATO on Russia's borders? Now, is it necessarily a weakness to suggest that, you know, Putin and the Russians do have an interest in not having NATO on their borders? Sort of like we wouldn't be too happy about having, you know, I don't know why I even say this. We've got a major problem on our southern border. I mean, the cartels are running the damn place, okay? And we're doing nothing about it. But let's just say, for instance, that the cartels become, you know, part and parcel of Islamic terror. I mean, would you like to have the Islamic State on your southern border? I sure as hell wouldn't, you know? And we would do something about it. And I think in this case that Putin does have a justified concern about having NATO on his border, okay? So having said that, though, how then do you explain Putin's approach to Ukraine where he's dismembered it already. Remember in 2014, Crimea. Shortly thereafter, he starts supporting pro-Russian, Ukrainians in the Donbass region in the eastern area there. So, I mean, if Putin's motives are pure and it's only, you know, concern for what's going on Russia's borders, then how the hell do you explain those things? How do you continue to explain, you know, movement into the Black Sea with amphibious ships that can take, you know, take portions more of the Black Sea coast of Ukraine? I don't know, folks. I mean, it seems to me that Putin has an ultimate goal, which basically is to resurrect the Soviet Union's empire. And if that's the case, then guess what? Okay? Not only is Ukraine in the target line here, but look at the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. U.S. troops are, and those three countries are all part of NATO now, the Baltic states. We've got U.S. troops in Lithuania. So if something happens, which is exactly what NATO wants to see happen, there's a guarantee we'll be there for you. And the trigger point is U.S. troops are going to be involved with, you know, fighting the Ruskies if Putin decides that the Baltic states are his and he's going to take them, and everybody be damned. So we have to see how this plays out. I mean, again, his end game he's always said this, he wants to resurrect that Soviet Empire. Well, okay, that's the Baltic states, now members of NATO. That's Poland, also NATO. And it could theoretically mean Ukraine, except right now Ukraine has not been accepted as a member of NATO for some internal reasons. Okay, but the point is, the bargaining chip here is, and this is a lot of, you know, the left-wing folks are saying, well, just give him what he wants. Go ahead and just say no NATO to Ukraine. And I think that does pose a question. Because like I said, if Putin was purely interested in making sure that Ukraine was not a threat, which it isn't, but really wouldn't be a threat by being part of NATO, then how do you explain what he's already done? And so it leads me to a conclusion that basically says, look, you can't trust Putin. He has ulterior goals, and that Ukraine is worth the effort. I mean, just think about this in terms of Ukraine's resources and all the rest of that could help the EU, you know, with trade and things like that. So just turning them over to Putin's tender mercies doesn't make sense to me. Is it worth World War III? I don't know. I think that there's probably a level of support we can give the Ukrainians without having to go to DEFCON 3. But on the other hand, how Biden is approaching this does not seem to me to indicate that he's very serious about sanctions. Why not just sanction Nord Stream 2 right now, just as Trump had done? But no, look what Biden does. Everything Biden does kowtows to the Russians, kowtows to the Chinese. Now, are you surprised? I mean, he and his family have gotten lots of money, especially from the Chinese. They are compromised. So just think about this in terms of the broad geopolitical spectrum here. What happens when Putin gets away with whatever he's going to get away with? Okay? The next round, he wins. Do you think for a second China is going to watch that and not do something about Taiwan? Which Taiwan to them is 10 times worse than what Putin has to deal with a NATO country on his flank. China can't stand Taiwan. It is a major threat to the whole edifice of the Communist Party's rule. So here we are, okay? This is the geopolitical problem that we're faced with, and this is where I disagree with Tucker Carlson on this. I mean, if we are going to have a degree of stability in the world's order, that means that country A just can't take over country B because it wants to. Okay? That was the whole basis of George Bush 43 going into Iraq, basically saying to Saddam, you can't just gobble up Kuwait because you want it. And even though Saddam had quasi-legitimate arguments about Kuwait being a former territory of Iraq, that argument did not hold water. Kuwait had been an independent country from the Brits since the 1970s. Okay? And so the argument that Bush made then, and I think it makes perfectly good sense today, big countries can't gobble up little countries without paying a price. Now, what's that price going to be if Putin does this? That remains to be seen. Like I said, we don't have to go to DEFCON 3. You know, it's not the Cuban Missile Crisis all over again. And we'll see where Putin, you know, goes with this. But I do think that we as the United States need to be very resolute about, no, you can't just gobble up Ukraine. There has to be severe consequences to it. Some of those consequences should have already been in place so that if he's a good boy, we can turn back the Nordstrom. Not that I agree with doing that. I mean, why the Germans are doing this is beyond my understanding. You know, but be that as it may, we'll see how this goes. All right, so I now have 2 minutes to go. What do you think, Lori? Can I talk about the governor's race here?
Sure, but okay.
Did you
happen to see the quote from President Biden yesterday in which he said, I'm going to work like the devil to drop gasoline prices?
I didn't see that, but...
Yeah, I had to double take and triple take, and the quote was shown and verbalized. I'm going to work like the devil to drop gas prices. And I thought, there they are telling us, but we're still not going to believe it.
Well, I mean, look, if he was serious about that, they could just put the pipeline back together that he canceled on day one. Okay? I mean, it's a no-brainer that if you cut supplies, the prices are going to go up. Okay, and then he's just made us dependent upon Russian and Saudi oil. I mean, this is the BS factor in what's going on here. And then they tried to walk away from their blame for tightening supplies and then thinking that the prices aren't going up.
Further,
give me a friggin' break.
I think my point was is the devil doesn't work on our side.
Oh, wow.
Never has, never will.
Right.
But he's going to work like the devil.
Okay, well...
That's what I was...
Okay. Speaking of working like the devil...
Okay, go ahead with your gubernatorial candidate comments.
Just a quick one here on the gubernatorial race. Look, so far, Ivy, as I've told you all before, I don't think has the degree of popularity that some of these polls indicate. And I do think that... when she starts getting hit with the gas tax, which John Sharp talked about in his column on Sunday's paper, okay, the gas tax is a major issue, okay? How about the $6 toll down here? You've got thousands of people down here that are still mad about what she did with the $6 toll. You think for a second they're voting for her? You can bet your sweet you-know-what Nobody's voting for her down here for that, okay? Then you've got education. Now, I mean, I was glad to see Lindy Blanchard come out and say the first thing she'd do is get rid of Common Core. No kidding. This governor has been lieutenant governor, governor, and she's still governor, and all she can do is talk about having a task force to talk about getting rid of dealing with the problem of education. This is the high BS factor that's there, and it really needs to end, okay? So like I was saying, she is vulnerable on many fronts, and I can't wait to see her go away, okay? And, you know, we'll see how all it works out, and I think next week we're going to try to have one of the gubernatorial candidates on the show. That's Dean Young. Dean is a Orange Beach businessman, or Gulf Shores businessman, and he's running for governor this time. So I'm looking forward to talking to Dean and hear what he has to say about it. So, Lori, look at this, 10:36. Not bad.
You did well.
For coming in cold after 3 weeks.
That's right. Thank you so much, Dr. Lou.
Thank you. Good to see you again, Lori. Nice to talk to you. Oh, listen, one last thing. This Wednesday at noon at the Daphne City Council Chambers, Congressman Mo Brooks, who Common Sense has endorsed, will be having a town hall meeting, so you'll have an opportunity to meet and greet him, talk to him, raise questions with him, and donate to him, too. I think that would be a good idea. So this Wednesday the 16th at noon, Daphne City Council. Just Google where it is, but it's right there.
Daphne City Hall.
Can't meet it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Y'all take care. God bless. Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, which includes the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus at 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. WABF now resuming our regular programming and reminding you, you can listen to this program and other talk shows and interviews later on our website, WABF1480.com.